Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer major. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we are here with all of your LGBT news. And my gosh, you know, there's always stuff happening. Don't you feel that that's the case?
I mean, there is always stuff happening, but is there always stuff happening that's worth talking about?
Yeah, you know what? I'm with you on that one. I think I agree.
Because this is, I mean, it's been a busy week, but some of it is, there's stories that are still ongoing and I don't want to talk about until they're more resolved, or there's things going on that are super interesting, but they're not really relevant to the Canadian context.
Yeah, because there was a news story about a news agency that came up this past week. We actually had a great chat, with an individual named, I think it's Kira, out in, I think it's Eastern Passage, Nova Scotia. You may be listening to our show at that station. And there's a great individual there that we may be hopefully working with moving forward. And they said, oh yeah, you know, already work with queer news organizations on their Instagram and other accounts, such as Gay Star News. I don't think it was Queerty. I think it was someone else.
Okay.
And I was like, well, okay, well, they're quite reputable. They've done really quite well. Gay Star News, for example, is a British company that's about 8 years old. And they've done a really good job of covering international LGBT news stories.
Okay.
In the US, you've got The Advocate, Out Magazine. Unless it's a massive story, like this Poland thing that's really blown up,
yeah,
you don't get it covered in these media. They're very American-focused.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be very Canadian-focused.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's hard to find international news, you know, of LGBT.
Well, it's
rights.
Easy to find international news, but international news from a reliable source is a different issue.
And Gay Star News has done a really good job of doing that, except now they've closed. They just, the week of the date of recording of this, so maybe about a week ago for our listeners, they shut shop. They've let 20-odd employees go, a lot of them are journalists, and have said that, you know, it's ironic because they have the highest readership they've ever had. Like, they've grown in terms of reputation, in terms of readership, number of articles, the whole shebang. They've just continued to grow in every way except revenues, because they rely on advertising. And one of the things that the owners have said, because when they shut shop, is that they believe that this is a direct result of corporations making their logos rainbow-colored and calling it a day.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, you know, this rainbow, I'm using air quotes here, rainbow washing, where companies can look all good and brilliant with their with the LGBT community, but, you know, they might donate to such and such an organization. Actually, I think we were talking about Primark in the UK got lambasted because they had a whole range of clothes and they were literally just profiteering off of the gay movement. And they got dragged over the coals for that.
Well, I think they saw it as, like, you know, putting a pride flag on a t-shirt is like putting Santa on a t-shirt. It's just that time of year. It's just a seasonal festival.
Yeah.
And I don't think they saw the politics behind it. That, you know, putting a turkey with a pumpkin and a scarecrow on a shirt. Yeah.
Santa didn't start out as a protest against being beaten to death by the police.
Well, modern Santa is actually a marketing ploy by Coca-Cola.
Well, yeah. Well, it definitely wasn't, Coca-Cola didn't start it in protest. Anyway, you know what? There's not enough of big old jolly white guys. We need more of those. Like, there's just
the
lack of them.
Former, what was he? The former Archbishop of Turkey is the actual Saint Nicholas. Is the former Archbishop of Turkey, and he's actually from Portugal or something like that. And I know a lot of people get really, like, you know, Santa is not the former archbishop of anywhere. That's bizarro. But yeah,
he's clearly the former archbishop of the North Pole.
Yeah, and everybody claims that he lives in their place. So, like, you know,
well, as Canadians, we all know that the North Pole is Canadian jurisdiction. Like, this is, he's Canadian.
I mean, I'm in the,
I'm pretty confident that they've actually issued him a passport.
Oh my God.
I feel like that's a thing. I think they've given him a passport.
He's dual citizenship Canadian and like Finnish.
Lapland or something.
Yeah. Lapland straddles Finland and Sweden.
Yeah.
The former autonomous, they were never a nation because this was before nation states existed. So it'd be the autonomous kingdom or something like that of Lapland. Whatever, Lapland. It's Lapland.
Anyway,
it's where the Lap live.
My point is,
the Lapish.
That's where Laps go when you stand up. They go to Lapland.
Laps go where you, that is a, what's her name? Philomena Kunk.
Yeah.
I love her. She makes me laugh every time.
They call her Lapland.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, back on track. Gaystar News, a brilliant, reputable source that's done really well, has now been closed. And they just couldn't get the advertising. So I think that's kind of sad that we're seeing that one closed. Pinknews.co.uk is still doing quite well. And those massive magazines, The Advocate, are now doing well as well. But we're seeing a shrinking of the media available. And I think, but the issue here is the fact that people aren't spending on gay things. You know what I mean?
I mean, how are we defining gay things?
Well, you can't, like, if you're literally any company now, you'd, except for Skittles, which went without the rainbow, which I still kind of think is adorable. But you know, nearly any company would just slap a logo filter on their a rainbow filter on their logo, and then that's it. They're gay friendly for the week.
I mean, you say that, but you know, in reality, they're just going to overpay some subcontractor visual designer to modify it to have a rainbow, even though their 18-year-old kid could slap a filter on it. Yeah. But they're actually going to pay someone like all 10 of the grand. Monies. Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, sorry, go on.
We digress. But the point is that, you know, the companies are doing that approach, direct social media.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there telling straight pride not to use your logo, you know, and all of these things. And they're spending money paying these graphic designers to make new logos and not actually engaging with queer content. So sometimes there are pride parades. They're maybe donating to queer charities. But queer businesses, I think, are losing a lot of those revenues. Mm. Those relationships, which are used to be the bread and butter of, like, you know, we'll work with anybody. We advertise anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, now it's like we have a rainbow colored logo. And the dollars have dried up. So that's what Gaystar News is blaming. Their revenues have been dropping for a long time, though.
The reality is probably more nuanced than that, because advertising dollars in general have gotten weird and complicated because of a lot of this outsourcing, because a lot of this sort of analytic-based internet blah, blah, blah stuff going on. I think that's probably definitely part of the story. I'm not going to deny that that's a true thing that's actually happening, and there is a lot less direct advertising happening. There were a few corporations, like the corporations that sort of got the ball rolling on this. So IKEA, Second Cup, and there's another company that were like the first three to directly advertise to the community in things like The Advocate and Fab Magazine back when it still existed, and Extra when it still existed. And they would go out of their way to call them up and say, we want to advertise in your thing. But it's not a big deal anymore. You know, it's not 2000 anymore.
Times are a-changing.
And it's a good thing. So this is a conversation that comes up every so often, mildly related. The idea that a lot of the LGBT services and queer services and ones that specifically target, like, you know, bi and lesbian women or gay and bi men and things like that, a lot of them are shutting their doors. But that's mostly because the state is starting to actually do its job. You can go to your family doctor, and more likely than not, they're going to be supportive. You can go to victim services, and they're probably going to do the right thing. You can go to the hospital, and they're going to help you like the way they're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these specialized services aren't as necessary as they were back when you would get turned away. So I think queer media is kind of going through the same thing, where really we can...
Do we need it?
I mean, do we need any media? I mean, really, just read a book if you want to get down to that. But I think it's what, is there enough desire? Is there enough want for it? I don't know if it's as needed as it used to be, but I think it is wanted. And I think it's wanted enough to have one or two games in town, but that's about it. I don't think we can support the market we used to have. So like having the broad range of like in the early 2000s on the Chum Network, as well as, you know, Much Music and all that, they had Queer TV. And it is not as, QT is not as necessary now as it was back in 2000 when it was a lot more relevant. Now it's, you know, you can read any blogger who does it volunteering on their own time. And I think that's partly another thing. And this is, they say that a lot of like the quality of journalism is sliding because it's cheaper to get activists than it is to get actual researchers. So it's cheaper to get bloggers who care about it, like you and I, to volunteer to do it on their own time.
I think it's unprofessionalizing the news as well.
It is, yeah.
And I think that what Gay Star News did and what some of the other ones do is they do the research, they have the journalists on the ground, they break stories that nobody would otherwise know.
Yeah.
And I think they do a lot of good work, and it's a shame that that they're passing, but as with many things, the advertising market won't sustain it anymore. We need to look at other options.
Yeah. Well,
are Canadians willing to pay? I don't know.
In Canada, we do have the CBC. And they're, again, they're not reporting on every single thing because, you know, they do have the bottom line and they do have copy editors and news editors who look at stories to see how interesting they are. But things are making it into the CBC front page that have to do with, you know, queer and trans news that never would have gotten in there 20 years ago, that they do care enough to include these stories. You know, you can read about, you know, whether or not BC is going to ban conversion therapy on the CBC, which maybe you didn't used to do. Other news sources like, you know, Huffington Post and the Canadian Post, the Canada Post, I should say, Maclean's, you know, a lot of the main journalism things in Canada, at least for the big stories, are reporting them.
This is where I want to do a bit of pushback, because Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was the first Prime Minister in Canadian history to go into a gay bar.
That we know of.
On the record, yes.
Yeah.
And he had a couple of drinks, he shook some hands, he was in Vancouver.
When I read that,
it made international news. It was on the CBC, it was everywhere.
Is that news, though?
Well, it is news that he's the first one to go into a gay bar, and I think we need to look at the reasons why. Gay bars were seen as sordid places. They were seen as dens of criminality. A lot of the rise of gay rights in Canada is because of raids on gay bars.
Well, you know, bathhouses.
And bathhouses, yeah. And gay bars.
Yeah.
So there's a long history there of gay bars being these seemingly very unsavory spaces.
I mean, between you and me, you know they are.
There have been a couple we've been to where it's like, oh, you know, Lysol wipes on the way out the door, but it's...
on the way in as well.
Just wrap yourself up in a cocoon of Lysol wipes. But there are a number of gay bars that serve much more of a social space purpose. It's like going to the Legion almost, you know, it's just being in a space together. My point here is everyone's talking about Trudeau. No one's really talking about why this is big news. You know what I mean? Everyone's like, oh, Trudeau walked in, shook hands, and it was 20 minutes. Patrons were thrilled. Why is this news still worthy? And the reason why is because of this very long history.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the city of Ottawa, where the Prime Minister, you know, lives.
And yet has never been to an Ottawa Pride. Last year was the first time, yeah.
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 No, a year before, I think.
The feds don't participate in Ottawa Pride. It's super weird. To me, all of this is too little too late. If this happened in 2005, 2006, I think it would have been a lot more politically relevant now. The fact that Justin Trudeau went into a gay bar in 2019, I'm sorry, but I'm not impressed. Like, if at this point in time, it is safe and it's good optics. There is nothing about it to me that actually says, you know, this is risky and supporting and that
but
sort of thing.
I think we have to look at how this juxtaposes to...
Relative to the international scene?
No, not just that. Even the conservatives. I remember going into a bar, and this is one of the weird things about Canadian media as well. They don't delve into the personal lives of politicians.
Mm.
And so out of respect to that, we won't reveal who, but people can probably guess. Under the conservative government of Stephen Harper, I was at a public service pride event. It's the LGBT pride. LGBT members of the public service have an event.
It's kind of a caucus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was at a bar, there's cocktails, everyone's jibber-jabbering about bureaucratic-y things. I don't know what they jibber-jabber about.
Yeah.
And I was there with a friend, and I saw someone from across the room, and I had this dreadful case of deja vu. I'm like, have I met them at a mixer somewhere? Was it, like, somebody I've chatted to on Grindr? Like, how do I know this person? And I lean over to the person I was there with. I'm like, how do I know who that is? And they revealed to me that they were a senior cabinet member of the said government at the time.
Yep.
And I think that boils it down. You know, that was a gay pride event.
Mm-hmm.
They were presumably there in a private capacity.
Yeah.
And yet it was not to be mentioned. It was so faux pas. It was so secretive.
I mean, it is kind of interesting as well when you're in... Living in Ottawa.
And then Ottawa. Trudeau is there shaking hands with a drag queen at a gay bar. That context really shows the night and day and why it's relevant.
I mean, it's also one of the disadvantages of living in Ottawa is that you get blinded to the relevance that the rest of the country sees. Because, like, here in Ottawa, looking at the presence of politicians in the local community, you and I know... Just from the participation and the presence of different politicians and their aides and all that sort of thing in the community, that broadly speaking, the Conservative Party of Canada does not care one whit, one way or the other, about gay issues. And they're doing it for optics reasons to play to their base. Because
at least that's what you feel.
Well, this is when you... Well, yeah, I mean, this is in my opinion. A lot of people... you know, upplay or downplay certain political opinions in order to seem more appealing to their base or in order to seem more consistent. It's so complicated. We should go to a song.
We should. We're going to jump to the first song, which is I Want to Break Free by Queen. I had the misfortune of actually watching Bohemian Rhapsody recently. And we talked about it when it came out. We were talking about some of the critiques of it, the both good and bad. And honestly, I think it was worse than what the critique said. Like, the lighting, the mood, the vilification of all of the characters who were gay.
Yeah.
Except for one at the very end is astonishing.
Mm.
For a man that is a gay icon to have been portrayed as it is the worst thing ever. Just, it shocked me. And it was, also I didn't much like Randy Malek's acting. In it. I felt it was very jarring, but that's just me. But Queen is monumental. This song famously got banned from MTV. This is I Want to
Showed the band in drag and bad drag as well, deliberately bad drag.
Yeah, but yeah. No, yeah. They were, and like Freddie was maybe into it. The rest of them were just like messing around. Like, they were just having a good time on set.
Yeah.
This is I Want to Break Free by Queen, and we'll be back just after this.
by my side. I don't want to live alone. Hey, God knows, got to make it my own. So baby, can't you see, I've got to break free. I've got to break free.
Welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
Yes, especially when you've been up to no good and I got to tell you off.
Yeah, that's a thing. Luke says my name differently if he is glad to see me or frustrated with me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you always know if you're in the bad books.
Because he pronounces my name the French. Sebastian, knock that off.
Absolutely. With like, you had it knocked it off with a French accent as well. It's like, how can you? Right. Well, there's one story that's been causing quite a lot of fuss. And is it Ferrari? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's like a Fura over something.
Yeah.
Fura. But I keep thinking that that's like the name of, you know, Adolf Hitler's official title.
Yeah, the Führer, yeah.
Okay.
The anger, yeah. That's, oh, I see. That's, yeah, that's where it comes from.
It is all the same word.
Yeah.
Not Furore. Okay.
Furore.
Ferrero. I don't know. I get confused. Tell me, what is the Ferrero story?
So, Mario Lopez, who you may remember as, I cannot remember his character's name, but he was on Saved by the Bell. And he's now an adult with kids and living in Hollywood, and he's on, I can't remember, it was like Dancing with the Stars or something. I don't know, but he's doing something now as an adult. And he was being interviewed by Candace Owens. This much I do know. Candace Owens is a, African-American conservative in the States, and she has opinions that are unnecessarily controversial. And by that, I mean, like, she has opinions that are, like, you could disagree with them, but I don't necessarily think they're radical. It's just things like, you can be black and conservative, or you can be a Republican.
So the disagreeing with her opinions is controversial, not her opinions themselves.
Yeah, her opinions themselves, it's, they contradict the sort of political gestalt of the era of the United States.
Sort of common narrative.
Yeah, the common understanding, like the idea that all Republicans are racist and she's a Republican who's African-American, who supports the African-American community and the black diaspora experience. And she's like, you can be both. Maybe historically they've done a bad job of it, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. And because she talks like that, she's considered to be a radical individual. I think she's actually just very moderate in an age where she's just right of center, but in a very moderate way, in an era where
was the fuss? What's all the fuss about?
So Mario Lopez was talking about how he has neighbors and coworkers in the Hollywood area who are identifying their children as trans. And he's saying that they should sort of back off and let the child decide for themselves when they get older. Now, the context is he was specifically talking about people he know who has, like, you know, 3 to 6 year old children. Mm-hmm. And not, because a lot of people are assuming he's talking about, like, you know, 12 to 18 or something like that, which is a different story. And now you have half the world saying he kind of has a point that, you know, most 4-year-olds don't understand what gender is yet. And a lot of 4-year-olds can't even remember if they themselves are a boy or a girl, let alone what that means. And you have other people saying that his opinion is transphobic and dangerous and that it is, you know, excluding the trans experience. And it's kind of, I don't want to say everybody's overreacting, but there's a lot of overreacting going on. And you have a lot of people saying, you know, maybe he didn't phrase his point well, but what he's trying to say is kind of moderate in the grand scheme of things.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. You know, kids don't wake up at the age of 12 suddenly going, oh my gosh, I think I'm trans.
Yeah.
You know, it's... They develop the language. They develop the better self-awareness. They develop the more nuanced understanding.
You know,
they may well be trans at 3 or 4, but they have no idea.
Well, the other thing
3-year-olds. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's ridiculous, but I think...
We have had trans people on our show in the past who have pointed out, they actually, I think they corrected me, and they said, you know, not every... trans person identifies as trans.
Mm-hmm.
Some trans people just identify as a man or as a woman, and they acknowledge that that makes them trans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that trans is their status. It's not their identity.
The process thereof.
Yeah.
Is, yeah.
You know, that they don't identify... Like, we have a common friend who I don't want to say her name on the air because that's unnecessary, but she has clearly said that she used to be trans and now she's just a woman. And if you don't like that, you can take it up with, you know, the pointy end of her fist. You're looking at me funny. I'll tell you the name after if you can remember. But when I say, you'll be like, oh, yeah, no, I've heard her say that. But it's that's fine. But it's I do agree that if you're talking about like 3 and 4-year-olds, I really do think we should just leave well enough alone. And that if they want to wear because. The best example I can think of is my own nephews. So my one nephew, when he was 4 or 5, at least around the house, he would usually wear a skirt, sometimes even like a costume tutu, because it was silly and it was fluffy and it was comfortable and it was like this really crazy color of purple that he loved, and purple's a fun color, and why not wear a purple tutu when you're at home? Occasionally, he would wear it in public. My brother never identified his child as being trans or as being, you know, gender dysphoric or as being, you know, wanting to be a girl. He identified his child as being someone who likes wearing a tutu, and that maybe later on his child may turn out to be trans. Maybe his child may turn out to be a gay boy. Maybe his child will turn out to be straight guy who just wore tutus when he was a kid. He's 5 right now. It's hard to say.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things, you know, what's really important to know is that, at least in the Canadian context, for trans folks, generally speaking, it's the self-affirmation piece.
Yeah.
You know, you we talked before with Faye about how you know, often trans people have to define their own health to the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big part of it now is that what we know for adolescents is that they provide hormone blockers.
Yeah.
Or puberty blockers.
I mean, to be clear, I do think if you're talking about like 5 to 8-year-olds and 12 to 18-year-olds, and there's that gap in the middle that's a bit fuzzy, but small children and teenagers are two completely different conversations.
Well, essentially what we're talking about is the onset of puberty, which can differ with each child.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, 5 is certainly far too young. but you know, the onset of puberty, and what these puberty blockers do for trans folks is it just pauses it. Mm. It pauses the physical alterations.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, instead of having breast reduction or breast removal if you're going female to male, you haven't developed them yet, so you don't have to go through the trauma of having surgery and all that jazz. And likewise, male to female, you know, you're not developing extra skin hair or you know, all the other things that come with developing as a male. And it just puts the pause on it. We're not really sure what the long-term effects of these hormone blockers are.
I mean, this is part of the issue, is that this is so modern that this is a living experiment at this point
in
time.
But the psychological impact is phenomenal.
Yeah.
What we know from trans folks who are much older is that a lot of the trauma, a lot of the suicide ideation and a lot of that comes from growing into the wrong body.
Mm-hmm.
And what this does is it pauses that and gives them a chance to figure it out. And some of them will choose the transition.
Yeah.
Some of them may choose not.
Yeah.
And I think what this really echoes back to is there was a number of studies in the 90s and early 2000s that looked at effeminate boys, boys that people thought may end up or may be gay boys.
Yeah.
Although now we would be looking, we'd be using language like gender dysphoria and gender trans and
non-binary, gender you know, non-conforming.
Exactly. We would using we would be using this language now, but back then they thought they were gay boys.
In my mind, I would say gender non-conforming is probably the best because it's very neutral about whether or not you're trans. It just means that whatever typical boy is, you're not that.
But I think they were studying the same thing, effeminate behavior.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what they found was is that for a whole bunch of these boys, a lot of them just grew out of it.
Yeah.
You know? Some of them did become gay men, and a couple of them were trans.
Yeah.
Like, true story. But, you know, for the vast majority, when they're young, when they're children, you do, there's a degree of copying your peers, there's a degree of being really excited about that one TV show or character that's kind of captured your imagination.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of influences, and I don't think we can infer a sexuality or a gender at that age. I think the only one who should be defining the gender and sexuality is children.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have seen interviews with trans children or children who are said to be trans, where the parent is reminding them that they are trans. And I find that peculiar. I think if the child identifies as trans, who am I to disagree with somebody else's identity? That's fine. But when the parent is reminding them, no, that means you're trans, honey. I think that's peculiar. Especially since like trans is, as I said, I've met quite a few trans people who say fundamentally they identify as being a woman or they identify as being a man, and that trans is something else on top of that. And that if you identify as a woman and also as trans, that quite often has political implications. It's more of the body politic of like living your identity in a way that is a political act. And I don't think that's neither a good thing nor a bad thing, but it is a choice that you can make. Like if you're an activist or if you work in the not-for-profit industry, I think it makes sense to do that because it is, you turn into a symbol for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the nature of your job, that is good for yourself, for your clients, for your career, for the field that you work in. It can be a very positive thing and it can be a very constructive thing, but not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody wants to live with their identity on their sleeve. The sort of like stereotype of like, you know, no, not the stereotype, but like the concept of like, you know, the gay farmer who's just like, I just milk the cows and have a husband. Like, there's nothing political about my being gay. Under some readings, they're wrong that, you know, they are a political entity to all the other dairy farmers in the area who say, well, there's the gay couple who lives next door. But like in their own mind, they do not view their gay identity as being political. And you just need to respect that. And I think the same should be true about, you know, trans kids, that they should just be allowed to be children first. And if they are trans, that's something that you acknowledge. It's not something that you put on a pedestal.
Kind of foist upon them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think we're all just overreacting just a tiny bit.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it goes back to that study about these kids.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of them just turned out Joe Schmoes, married with kids.
Yeah.
Maybe they work at the farm. Maybe they drive a truck. Like, you know, they're just anybody, any old person.
I was profoundly effeminate. I was deeply effeminate. If I were, like, as I was as a kid today, people would call me trans. And now people mistake me for a straight guy. I don't know how, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, things turn around. But again, this is the exact same thing. Sometimes it's a phase. Sometimes it's not. Be open-minded and don't press them into anything.
I think the important takeaway is if a child has... It's important to be affirming.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of trans folks have said that alienation from the family is one of the leading causes of suicide ideation.
Yeah, yeah.
And trans folks have a suicide rate that's astronomically higher than non-trans folks.
Yeah.
And a big part of that is being chucked out, turfed by the family, and so on. And I think maybe the pendulum's swinging a bit too far the other way, as in declaring your 3-year-old is trans. I think that might be a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's important to be aware that if your child identifies as whatever, unless it's like an ostrich or a tiger, you said earlier, you know, what if your 5-year-old declares that they are a tiger that day? It's like, are we into trans-species? Yeah. Like, well, how are you, what are we doing here? But
most of what a four-year-old says you should take with a grain of salt, because they're going to say all sorts of weird things. And it, sometimes it's just they don't have the language skills. So, like, you know, the neighbor is a rabbit. And are they saying that the neighbor has a rabbit? Are they saying that the neighbor is rabbit-like? Are they saying, like, what are they actually saying about the neighbor? They could be just talking gas, you know? It could be... It could just be hot air being expelled from their face that has no meaning. Mm-hmm. Like, it's when you're talking about a four-year-old, like they're still becoming people. And there are studies that show that a child's personality and their sense of self and their self-identity starts to firm up at around 9 or 10. And that like the cynical approach is that until that point, they're just, you know, a mammal that can walk on two legs, which I think is going a little bit too far. I do like the idea of children being tiny drunk adults who are too drunk to remember where their keys are. And that if you treat a small child like a tiny drunk adult. One of
my
favorite,
and it drives my sister up the wall, but she had Bentley, who's now three, but she has another little girl who's a baby, obviously. Mm. And I like doing voiceovers as if they're just like super drunk. Whoa! Like, and they look at you like, oh my God, where am I?
Whoa, yeah. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Baby voiceovers, it's hilarious. Yeah, it makes me giggle. Yeah. They don't like it, but absolutely, I like it. Yeah. Absolutely. But it's not just babies. I think there are adults who are taking the language of the moment and using it. Like, there's an individual that we both know who is a bit larger and is often espousing this particular language. And it's like they're saying that they're gender non-conforming, they're trans-identified. And I think the meaning of the words are becoming a bit...
foggy.
A bit thinned out at the edges.
Yeah.
Because no one that I know fully meets the gendered stereotype of a man. The gendered stereotype of a woman. And it's like, I don't know anyone like that.
Everyone's, is a conversation, you know, that I had with my dad before he passed away. He asked me, like, what does it mean to be gender non-conforming? And I said, that... you look at what you believe society expects of you as a man or as a woman, and you can't identify with that. And, you know, when you look at the concept of masculinity, it seems foreign to you. And whenever you try to adhere to that, you feel like you're trying to wedge yourself into something that doesn't exist. And my dad basically said, everybody feels that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, first of all, you're right. But I guess the way that I should add that is that people who identify as gender nonconforming, is that's true to a point where it interferes with their life.
Hmm.
And he's like, I mean, that's everyone. I was like, okay, how do I explain this? And the more I tried to explain it to my dad, I was like, oh, I mean, first of all, this is a spectrum. This is not an on off thing. This is a continuum of, you know, someone who's just like, yeah, no, whatever, I'm masculine, I got no problem with that, to people who are trans, and you have that foggy area in between, which is where most people are, where they look at the expectations on them as a man or a woman, and they're like, yeah, no, that's stupid. But I mean,
for men, we get, we have higher rates of bigorexia, and in particular with gay men, and that's gay men who are just packing on the muscles.
Yeah, you're not a real man until you're muscular.
Yeah, and they're built like they could topple over because maybe they skipped leg day. But it's like they're super jacked, but it's...
And yet Bruce Lee was a wiry, skinny little guy, and he could beat up URI with his eyes closed.
But it's a eating disorder, almost similar to like anorexia and bulimia. And it's something that's more common to men who have a feeling that they have to be bigger and stronger and so on.
Yeah.
As opposed to being smaller and thinner.
Mm-hmm.
That's all tied to sense of body image. Mm-hmm. And I think that we hear a lot now about, oh, I'm post-gender or gender non-conforming or what have you. And it's like, well, no one's really the gendered stereotype.
Yeah.
Like, I'm yet to meet... My brother comes pretty darn close. He's very, very close to a male gendered stereotype.
Yeah.
Actually, we're going camping next weekend.
And I don't think it's out of insecurity. I think that's actually what he's like.
It's just generally him.
Yeah.
We're going camping next weekend, and my sister's boyfriend's bringing venison sausages. And I think my brother's going to bring some Angus beef or something, you know, equally as manly. And I'm like, I'm going to go Loblaws and buy some of those Beyond Meat burgers.
And then mix them in and see if you can tell the difference.
Yeah. And get some, like, vegan kale chips and, like, some gluten-free buns.
I actually had my first Beyond Burger last night.
It was surprisingly good.
It gave me the toots, something fierce, but I couldn't tell the difference.
It's peas. It's
I know. Peas. When I was eating it, I couldn't tell the difference. But for the next, like, actually up until 2 hours before I came to record, I was pretty tooty. So I may not have another one because my gut did not like it, but it was it tasted fine.
That's one of the things I've heard about the Beyond Meat burgers is that some people who just don't eat a lot of red meat and because it doesn't sit well.
Yeah,
will eat this and it also just doesn't sit well. It's apparently very good at mimicking all kinds of meat behaviors. But I was gonna just joke about.
But about the gender non-conforming thing, one of my favorite counterpoints to all this is that Chaucer talks about it. So like 12th century England, is it 12th? No, 14th century England, whatever. Middle English period, like way before, you know, Richard III. And they're talking about like some of the characters in there. Read the Reeve's tale, because the Reeve talked about his sense of masculinity and how he didn't identify and how he found his own way of being a man. And this is like 800 years ago. This is a continuing, this is not a modern phenomenon at all. Mm-hmm. There are, I mean, Sei Shinana in the 10th century Japan wrote about her conflict of being a woman. Like this is not new. This is not a Western phenomenon. This is not a modern phenomenon. This is a human problem that's been going on for as long as there have been literacy. So, I mean, part of it is I just read too much, and there comes a point where everything, the more you read ancient history, the more you're like, oh, that looks modern except bronze instead of computers, you know? And so, I mean, it's, I don't know.
Why don't we jump to the next song?
Oh, okay. So,
speaking of somebody who doesn't quite fit gendered right norms, you wanted to choose Klaus Nomi. Do you want to let us know why?
Yeah, so about a week ago, I watched a documentary on Klaus Nomi, and Klaus Nomi is why the 80s was weird. So everybody who's really weird in the 80s was either imitating Klaus Nomi or they were imitating someone who was imitating Klaus Nomi. And that sort of like weird shoulder pads and asymmetry and like, you know, women with like a lightning bolt on their face and that was their quote unquote makeup or like big swooshy crazy hair pieces. Klaus Nomi was a German who moved to New York to engage in the avant-garde scene. He was trained in opera and then started making pop music. And that transition, and he was a contralto as well. So he was like, a lot of people call him a soprano. That's not actually what he was. It was he would sing in the head voice, but it was a male singing high, and he was trained in the male, because there are traditional roles in opera where men sung high, and he was one of the few people who was trained in that, and then took sort of like avant-garde German theater and brought it to New York, and people just did not know what to do with him because he was bizarre. But the documentary, this was actually one of the first documentaries I've seen in a while that actually made me weep. Like, it was really heartbreaking. He died in 1982 of HIV, and this was so early in the process. They called it gay cancer for the first time about a month before he died. So it wasn't even GRID yet. It wasn't HIV. It was
being gay-related immunodisease.
Yeah. So it was, like, they didn't even know what to call it yet when he died. So he spent the last month of his life alone in hospital where even the nurses didn't want to visit him because they were afraid. Nobody knew how it spread yet. The world just abandoned him at the last minute and he died alone. And he kept calling people because he could use a phone and people didn't know how to talk to him on the phone. So it was like really, really a heartbreaking end.
And on that note, this is the Nomi song.
The Nomi song, his one of his more famous songs, which is very Klaus Nomi and very 80s and very weird 80s. And I love it.
And we'll be back just after this.
Saw my face, could I?
Hello and welcome back to Cangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we have just one more story for you folks tonight, and that is in British Columbia, in BC, in Canada, obviously, for those who are unsure. They have issued, first of all, there is a petition to try and get the federal government to ban conversion therapy, specifically of minors. Mm-hmm. I think in the States, I think it was the governor of Maryland just banned...
Yeah.
A conversion therapy under insurance and so on and so forth.
I definitely think banning non-voluntary conversion therapy on minors should be a no-brainer.
Yep.
Absolutely easy.
If you cast your mind back, Randy Wassenaar, the MPP of Edmonton, one of the MPs in Edmonton, and the LGBT
Secretary of LGBT Affairs?
Is the
Office of LGBT...
LGBT Special Advisor, I think he is.
Party Time? I don't know.
Yeah, I forget his title. But he's, I think he's the LGBT Special Advisor to the Prime Minister.
Right, yeah.
And he tweeted out, and the government tweeted out that they, this is a while ago, that they're looking into conversion therapy, but it's a provincial issue, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were looking at, you know, kidnapping is still illegal in the criminal code. It's not been not illegal.
Yeah.
And various types of abuse are also illegal. And
yeah.
Like, well, it's a health / education thing.
Yeah.
It's a provincial issue. The provinces need to deal with it. Well, the provinces broadly have. Some provinces like Ontario have banned it, as have a number of others. But there hasn't been any kind of concerted, coordinated effort. And there is a feeling that this should be criminal to put youth and children through this. So, which is why there have been about 70,000 at time of recording, 70,000 signatures to a petition in support of a ban. There's about 71,000 people who have signed it so far. But not only that, a number of BC officials, including the Attorney General of BC, the Minister of Health of BC, and a number of others, including the member of the Legislative Assembly for the West Vancouver, I think, have all written an open letter to the government being like, needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting to see if the Liberal Party brings it up for the upcoming election.
At the federal level or at the provincial? When's the next BC? No, they just did an election. The
federal election, yes, in October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, I know that, but
they tried to... There was very much an approach a few months ago about the Liberal Party just brushing it off almost.
Yeah, saying, that's up to the provinces to decide because this is education and health and that's at the provincial level.
And films like Boy Erased, which you can now catch on Crave, I think it's going to reach a wider Canadian audience.
Well, also, So I Married a Cheerleader. No, not So I Married, but I'm a Cheerleader. That's what I'm trying to say. No, that's So I Married an Axe Murderer. That's a different movie altogether.
But Boy Erased looks at the modern sort of conversion therapy.
Yeah.
Especially out of the States, the sort of the American style. And I think there's more Canadians watching that. There's more Canadians talking about it. There's more Canadians thinking, how on earth is this even allowed?
Right, yeah.
And a part of that is forcing the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of months ago when they passed the buck to the provinces, we didn't expect to be talking about it again.
Yes.
But there's a lot of pressure coming back the other way.
Yeah.
Being, you know, really telling the feds, you know, this should be a criminal issue, not a health issue.
Yeah.
Because when, you know, it's not a health-based policy. It doesn't make any sense.
If you're a legal adult and you want to do weird things to your own body and mind, I think there are limits to this, but broadly, I think you should have the freedom to do whatever you want so long as you don't hurt other people. But if you're talking about minors who do not have the option to say no, I think we're looking at, like, yeah, no, the government needs to step in and make a law, for sure, 100% for sure. The adult issue, I think, is a little bit more nuanced and complicated. I would like to see it to be banned in Canada, but I also understand that there is a civil rights and freedoms argument against banning it for adults who are showing up voluntarily. But for minors, absolutely not. Ban it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see what the government does as we move forward. A number of provinces already have. A number of states In the US of A have also been banning it. There's no federal plan there. It's going very much state by state. And we'll just have to wait and see. We'll be keeping an eye on that and a number of other issues as the election comes near. Now, that's all we have time for. We're playing out with Luba's Secrets and Sins. Do you want to tell us why?
Well, we were on an 80s rip, and I was listening to Luba recently because I just thought, I haven't listened to Luba in a while. And then I came across this song, which I forgot existed, and it's amazing, and it's super 80s, but in a good way. Luba is a Ukrainian from Canada who started off singing in Ukrainian, switched to singing in French, rounded up singing in English, and basically is everything Heart was trying to be, but slightly better. Luba is an amazing artist, and she has come out in support of the gay community. She did that in the 80s and 90s, back before it was trendy. So she was like risking her career by doing so at the time. So she's kind of like this treasure of the 80s and 90s of Canadian culture.
And we'll be back next week. I've been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. And thanks for listening.